Now, football is a global game. Football is an amazing, amazing pursuit. It can become an obsession. And it's also something that's been used throughout its briefish history to kind of make political points. We have seen, for example, you know, I know The Great Escape is based sort of on a true story. So is, to an extent, Escape to Victory. And I learned that because, you know, history is part of the fabric of the beautiful game, the football museum. And there are countries where the game has got overshadowed, if you like, the States, by other maybe more recent or certainly more complicated sports. Ireland's got a different relationship with football, I think, because, of course, there was, for a long time, I think, basically since the Elizabethan era, it was a state that had been conquered and brutally repressed by the Brits. And so you might be forgiven for thinking it's things like Gaelic football, that kind of thing. Hockey they love over there. But they do love their football as well, as we all know. And that history, the interweaving history, the warp and the weft of Ireland's history, football, the beautiful game, is brilliantly told in a new book, his latest by Chris Lee, called Shades of Green, A Journey into Irish Football, and it's published by Pitch. Good morning, Chris. So, I'm guessing, I've heard your accent, I'm guessing you're not maybe directly of Irish heritage. What prompted this book?
No, I'm not, you're right. And it's what interests me is the confluence between football, history and politics so often. And you often get that with Ireland. The very interesting thing about Ireland is that the football sort of reflects the politics and the history of the island, whereas other sports such as rugby and cricket are still kind of, and Gaelic Athletic Association games like hurling, yeah, and Gaelic football that you mentioned, they're still done on an all-island basis, whereas soccer isn't. There's a very interesting reason behind that. The other thing that interests me a lot about Ireland is that the stadiums are very much what we may find familiar over here from like the 80s and the 90s, and sort of, yeah, kind of pre-Taylor era. So it's kind of like old school for me. It's like going, yeah, back in time. A lot of them, there's some really lovely stadiums over there, like the Oval in Belfast and Daly Mount in Dublin, which is home of Bohemians, which is changing soon. So there's, and the other great thing as well is that League of Ireland is having a moment right now. There's various reasons for that, which we might delve into, but is fan, you know, numbers are going up. They had record crowds in the cup final a couple of years ago, record crowds at the season opening as well. So it's definitely having a moment right now.
And I was surprised to read in your introduction, because I wouldn't have automatically assumed this is where your audience was, that you have a very big Irish take-up of your rather fine podcast, Outside Right, which is a great listen, folks. He's the host of it, Chris. Was that in part what prompted you to go for this as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I went over and did a talk in a pub with a friend
of course
of mine.
It was a talk in a pub, of course.
Absolutely. It's where the best ideas come from, as you know. And it's, gosh, we did a 60-minute talk on the history of game in Ireland, and which came, you know, it was inspired by my first book, Origin Stories, which is kind of country by country story about how the game got going. And Ireland was the fourth chapter because it's the fourth oldest kind of association in football. And we had 60-minute chat, sort of presentation. Then it was 90-minute Q&A. Just went on, and everyone just kept talking, and it was great. And we talked about all sorts of things, like, you know, funding and facilities and women's football. And I thought, you know what? There's so much to unpack here. So I just sort of delved into it really and went over, and made some trips.
Wonderful photographs in the book, including a blue plaque, an Ulster history circle plaque to John McCready McAllery, I think you pronounce it. Tell us a bit about him.
McAllery,
actually, my Irish pronunciation isn't what it was. Tell us about this fantastic supporter of the game, this Hibernian chappie.
Well, he was the guy who is credited, anyway, as being the father of Irish football and bringing it over. He was one of many, probably, that helped bring it. But the apocryphal story is he was over in Edinburgh on a honeymoon and saw some football there, which may or may not be true. But
couldn't have been the most, shall we say, exciting of honeymoons if he ducks out for the missus and goes to watch a football game.
Well, exactly. It's what's interesting is the connection between Belfast in particular, which is where he's from, and Glasgow. So the shipbuilding and the Scottish connection, you'd expect football to have really taken up before that. So this is 1879. So this is when Glasgow is the centre of world football, really. He's coming into that period. And so he kind of, you know, brings the Glaswegian pioneer team called Queen's Park, which is still going, everyone knows them, over for an exhibition match. And it caught on, and he founded the Irish Football Association, which is the IFA, which is now in charge of just Northern Ireland because of the split. And at this point, he then has the first international against England in 1882, which actually was disastrously wrong. And they lose 13-0, which is still England's highest win. And either Irish country's biggest defeat still.
Now, there's an amazing photograph from 1927 in the book of the Irish women's team that took on Ruth Glynn ladies in Derry. That was in 27. Mm-hmm. Please tell me the woman at the very back is the goalie. There's a woman in this line who seems to be 17 foot tall.
That's Molly Seaton that you're talking about. And no, she was very much a goal scorer. So
she's a kind of Peter Crouch with bosoms.
Well, I suppose that's one way to describe it. But yeah, she was pivotal at the time. Obviously, you can imagine that women's football faced the challenges you would expect at that point. This is just 6 years after the FA ban in England. It didn't apply to Ireland, of course. So you find teams like Ditka Ladies, which are a very famous English team from Preston. They travelled over and played some games over there, as did the Rutherglen Ladies. And yeah, so she was a kind of really epoch-making over there, I suppose, and enjoyed a lot of success. And now she has murals for her and everything in her hometown.
And a tribute to her in your wonderful book. We're talking to Chris Lee, author of Shades of Green, A Journey into Irish Football. There are two figures, one of whom isn't Irish, who are at the heart of this book, who everybody knows, and that's George Best and Jack Charlton. George Best, I mean, it's very poignant what you've written about George Best, about the home and people who stayed there after he died. And it's, I mean, I'm of an era when I saw him play live, and I was aware of him being like the fifth Beatle.
No, absolutely. And it's very accessible, the George Best. You can go and stay at his house if you want. They've done it up very tastefully, as it, you know, exactly where he started playing in the Craigra Estate. There's a lovely big mural of him at the back, kind of overlooking the playing fields where he learned to play and where he was just kind of discovered by Bob Bishop, who's the scout for Manchester United. But his family home's right there, where he would have grown up. They've done it up as pretty much as if it was in the 60s, 50s and 60s. So as I've said in my book, it's just like going to my nan's house. You know? It's like, it feels really familiar, but a real throwback. So yeah, they've done a really good job of honouring him, I think.
And you've got a photograph of a tribute to a mural, I think it's of Jack Charlton. Put Him Under Pressure is the legend on that. He was a remarkable man, a great player, but also he was like the kind of messiah of Irish football for a while.
Yeah, I mean, certainly took them places. The interesting thing about Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland is their success is kind of dovetailed. So Northern Ireland's peak was 82 and 86, winning the British Home Championship in 84, and then they kind of decline as the time the Republic comes up under Jack Charlton. And the country changes a lot during that period that he's in charge, which was, you know, kind of mid-80s to mid-90s.
So is it under Jack Charlton then that Ireland beat West Germany twice?
No, that was Northern Ireland.
Oh, that was Belfast. Okay, right, okay. Yeah. So that was their peak, was 84, the European Championships, and then we get the Republic.
And then, so he qualified for 88, Euro 88, to beat England, obviously, in the first game, you might remember, the looping header from Ray Houghton, which... that's when it kind of people sat up and took notice for once about the international team. And this was when the Euros were really strong. There's only eight countries in it, if you remember those days. Go to World Cup 1990, got to the quarterfinals, having won a game. Remember, they got through on three draws and then a penalty shootout against Romania.
And a four-leaf clover or Shamrock or something, yeah.
Yeah, and so then they went to USA 94, and I think after that they kind of declined, but they had peaked. They're kind of in the top 10 of the world at one point.
Now, you've written two earlier books, which I know are still available. One is Origin Stories, and one is, I think, called The Defiant. Could you tell us briefly what those two are about?
Yeah, so Origin Stories is the country-by-country story of how the game got started. So look at the people who got the game going from the very first sort of match and the foundation of the FA and things like that, up to the 1930 World Cup, by which time the game is global. The Defiant is very much, Defiant, the history of football against fascism. Mm. So that was written to coincide with the centenary of the March on Rome by Mussolini. And there's been a lot of focus on like football and far-right politics, but no one had really looked at football as a platform against far-right. So strangely,
was Juventus anti-Mussolini then, the football team?
No, not really. I think the team that probably was most is a team called Lucca.
Right.
Yeah, Lucchese, which is had a sort of maverick Hungarian coach called Epstein. And he kind of signed players who couldn't get ahead because of their politics. So, you know, players that refused to do the salute, for example, back in the 30s for Fiorentina, one of their players went. And then obviously you had a lot of Italian partisans in World War II as well, sort of taken to the hills. And yes, there's a lot of stories of not just...
And very quickly, did you see the Sky Mussolini series, Man of the Century? Because I thought it was remarkable.
I didn't.
I think you'll love it when you catch it. And I love the book. The book's called Shades of Green, published by Pitch, A Journey to Irish Football, Anecdotes Galore, great photographs, written by Chris Lee. It's the third book. I'm going to be ordering the other two because this one's an absolute belter. And we're live, my friends, till 5 on Talk Sport and on Talk.